Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly, and joining us in the VIP tent this week is two returning guests. First is Lieutenant Colonel Dan Greenfield. Hi, Dan.
Every time I'm on, it's a different rank.
I promoted you since the last episode.
Oh, so
you should be happy about that. Yes, yes. And also with us is Chief Surgeon Ange. Hi, Ange.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for both doing this. This is a little unusual. This is the first time I've had two guests on an episode of MASHcast. And the reason we're doing this is very special, is that before I made the announcement of that I was going to be assigning guests to season three episodes, both Dan and Ange wrote me independently without prompting that they needed to do this episode, and they both wrote me on the same day. And I couldn't deny either one of them that, you know, this episode, for different reasons. I might need some medical attention at some point. I was worried about that. And I didn't want Dan to fire me off of 13dimension.com. So I said yes to both of you. So gentlemen, thank you both for joining me. I'm sorry it's so crowded here in the VIP tent.
That's okay. Thanks for having us both, Rob.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks for having both of us here. My guess is we both really love this episode, this should be a fun podcast.
Absolutely. So, the episode we're here to talk about is Season 3, Episode S47/19J, Adam's Rib. The original air date was November 26, 1974. It was written by Lawrence Marks and directed by Gene Reynolds. And since both our guests have been on the show before, we're going to get right to the episode. With little or no wounded to take care of, Hawkeye and Trapper are bored, bored, bored. To make matters worse, the mess tent has served the same awful food for 11 straight days. Liver or fish? Hawkeye swears if they serve liver or fish one more time, they head to the mess tent, and indeed, they are serving liver or fish. Hawkeye goes bonkers, at first yelling at the cooks and then leading the whole company in a chant of, "We want something else." Henry makes a half-hearted attempt at a reprimand, but when he makes an offhanded comment about ribs, it sparks something in Hawkeye. Ribs. That's what he wants. That's what he needs. Hawkeye decides he wants, again, nay, needs, ribs from Adam's Ribs, a takeout joint in Chicago. Henry sort of dismisses this juvenile demand, but Hawkeye won't be dissuaded. In the middle of the night, he has Radar place a call all the way to Chicago, lying to an ever-growing list of people, so they patch him into Adam's Ribs. Finally, he places an order. The only problem is how to get them to the 477th. After a couple of false leads, Trapper remembers he knew a girl in Chicago named Mildred. They call her, and Trapper makes sweet talk with her so she'll pick up the ribs and ship them overseas. Mildred is pleased to hear from Big John. The ribs get stuck in supply since they didn't come with the requisite pile of official paperwork. The greedy supply sergeant, upon hearing the package contains the famous Adam's Ribs, demands a cut and coleslaw. He is stunned when Hawkeye sadly informs him that he forgot to order the coleslaw. Finally, the ribs arrive, and Hawkeye, Trapper, Radar, Klinger, and Henry sit down to eat. Just as they are about to dig in, wounded arrive. Hawkeye, in a rare moment of not dropping everything at the sound of incoming choppers, has to be dragged off by Trapper and Henry, begging for even the tiniest piece of rib to tide him over. All right, boys, so I'm going to guess that you are in agreement that this is one of the funniest episodes of the show, period?
Well, I would actually one up you on that one. I think it is the funniest show they ever produced.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the Sugar Ray Robinson of MASH episodes. Pound for pound, joke for joke, it is funnier than anything they've ever done. From beginning to end, it's one great caper. And, you know, usually there's some mixture of pathos or drama, but even their other caper shows like this one can't hold a candle to this episode. From beginning to end, it's a masterpiece.
Yeah, I'll completely agree with that. The thing that gets me about this episode is that every time I watch it, there's a different line that sticks out to me as like my favorite joke, or oh my god, I never heard that joke before, because it is like chock-a-block full of one-liners that if you're not listening and following closely will just like come and go and you won't even realize it. Like, honestly, as I was like taking notes on this episode, and I go, I know Rob's probably going to ask me what my favorite joke is. I literally reached nine. Like,
yeah.
like you know, and
yes.
I'm like, okay, I can't I can't say that many funny jokes, right? I have to pick one of these, but all of these are so great. And like you said, there have been other capers, right? Like, I need new boots, and so I'm going to keep trading things and lying and trading and lying. But, you know, that one can't hold a candle to this one. This one, from beginning to end, is just a riot.
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, it's, you know, I was recently on the show earlier this season with OR, and this couldn't be a more polar opposite episode.
Oh, it's the alpha and omega of MASH in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways, and the fact that they came in the same season, it just really shows you this is a show. And you and I've talked about this before, Robert. I think the seasons 4 and 5 really are the high point. This is just about as good as it gets. And even though there might have been funnier moments in various episodes, I just don't think that from a sheer comedy standpoint, there was ever a show that was better than this one. And like you were saying, Ange, about, you know, I knew Rob was going to ask me, what's my favorite joke? Because I can't name a favorite joke. Half of the lines on this show have been part of my family lexicon for 40 years. I mean, ever since I was a kid watching this episode with my mom, this has been a family favorite. It was one of the first, I think it might be the first episode I ever showed my son. And it's just one of those things that really just, it hits home. And I think what's great about it is it's not just that you're projecting yourself into the unit. You know, usually it's you're watching something that you can't do. I'm not a surgeon. I can watch with fascination what they're doing. But this particular episode is universal. The craving for something you cannot have in that moment and what you're willing to do to get it is it gets under your skin, and you feel for Hawkeye, and the way he even describes the way the food is and the taste of it all these years later, you get roped right into this thing. So you're fully invested in their getting to pull this thing off.
And it couldn't actually be a more timely episode, because you've got our heroes bored silly,
yes,
because they're confined and they desperately need takeout.
Yeah.
We're all living that life right now.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, that's perfect.
This episode is the glory of takeout food. I mean, who can't? I mean, for God's sakes. I don't know what you guys are doing, but I mean, we are just trip hammering through all our favorite restaurants right now. We're just going through rotation, and luckily we have lots available to us. Poor Hawkeye and Trapper, and having to eat liver or fish. Yeah, talk about grim. Oh, my God.
The most disgusting option.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, it's funny. And in watching this, I realized, you know, Father's Day is coming. Ribs.
Yeah.
But I hope that the local place is open, and then of course I don't know what I'm going to do if they're not, because then I'm going to be stuck there like Hawkeye in my house without the ribs on Father's Day.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned so much of this being in your family's lexicon, because the same is true for my family. You know, as I said when I've been on this show in the past, we used to watch MASH every day from 5 to 5:30 before dinner. Right?
Where did it was you grow like a tradition. Up? Where did you grow up? I'm sorry, didn't mean to
Rhode Island. Up here in New England, and the thing that's funny is that, you know, we were not affluent, and occasionally we would have to eat liver or fish for dinner, right? And my mom was not a great cook either. And so, you know. She will admit it. You know, my grandmother was a great cook, and my sisters are great cooks, and my mother's like, it skipped a generation. But it's very funny, because that whole line, like, I've eaten a river of liver, right, and an ocean of fish, that's been said at the table, like, every single time one of those things get taken out, you know? Or the whole, like, he said this, and then he got rude, right?
Right.
Like, those are all lines that, like, my family will say and will laugh.
I do have to mention one particular story, just because it occurs to me as you brought it up, Ange. My mom was actually and is a good cook. I will say that. I've been fortunate with that. But the one thing that she used to make that I could not stand was shepherd's pie, which was an Irish dish, which to me, as to borrow the words of Patton Oswalt, it's a failure pile and a sadness bowl. It's just all horrible ingredients, all smooshed together. And many years later, after I became an adult, my mother said, oh, there's a recipe for shepherd's pie. Do you want it? And I was like, God, no, I don't want it. It's awful. And she's like, well, how do you know you don't like it? I said, because I had it. And it's awful. And she goes, when did you have it? I said, you made it. And she goes, I've never made shepherd's pie. And I go, yes, you have, because I've had it. And the only way I could have had to have eaten it was if I was living with my parents and I was forced to eat it. I would have never chosen to eat shepherd's pie as a fully functional, autonomous adult. So no way ever. It's just the worst. It's just the worst. Except for that, mom was a good cook, I have to say. So there is that. I know that's a little far afield of what we're talking about. When else am I going to bring that up? So one of the things I thought it was worth noting in this episode, and when I've mentioned about MASH, I mean, virtually all episodes of MASH are bottle episodes to a certain extent, right? Because MASH doesn't go very far, right? Except the occasional trip to Tokyo where you see another set. But it's a bottle episode in a different way in that it features so few characters.
Yeah.
There is no Hot Lips in this episode. There is no Frank in this episode. Henry is only really in this episode for the first half. It is really just Hawkeye, Trapper, and Radar on a caper with the occasional Klinger worked in.
Right.
That's it. I mean, this is the most pared down episode imaginable, that it's like most of the cast isn't even here.
It's not just that, but there's something else that jumps out at me, especially in watching it and, you know, looking at it for clues and looking at it for different things as opposed to just, you know, riding along and watching it, you know, getting ready for this podcast, is one of the things that I thought that MASH always did well, especially with Alan Alda. It's a great underrated talent for an actor, is to be doing the telephone call.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know that there's nobody at the other end, and yet you're able to land the jokes and react in a way like that's realistic and you know, in human, and all three of them get that moment with Radar and Hawkeye and Trapper all getting the phone call, and each scene is just better than the last.
Oh yeah, this episode is like a Bob Newhart record come to life.
Yeah.
You know,
yes,
where it's just got all of these phone routines, and everybody's got something funny too. And again, it's like that's got to be kind of a lot easier to write. Because you don't have to write the other half of the conversation. I mean, you do, but I mean, you don't have to worry about an actor doing it. It's
right.
Probably just somebody offhand just reading them the lines. But yeah, the second half of this thing really is like a radio play, because you're just hearing the one side of the conversation, and it is hysterical. And, you know, I'm watching the show as it rolls on, and, you know, we have that opening scene with Hawkeye and Trapper in the tent where they're bored. And then we go to the scene in the mess tent where I love how happy Igor and Roy Goldman are to deliver this food. Like it's a wonderful surprise. They're like, and for the entree today, we have liver fit. Like, it's like, what response are they expecting from everybody after you've served that same crap for 11 days in a row? I love how upbeat they are about it, which is fantastic.
Yeah. The thing that I love about that scene is, and again, it's like blink and you miss it, is that when they go in for the entree, Trapper goes, steady.
Right? Steady?
Yeah. He knows that Hawkeye is going to lose it. And so it's that subtle, you know, again, like you say, these two guys know how to play off each other so well that one word, I thought, is just perfect.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, Ange, because that, like I was mentioning before, how this was the first episode, I'm pretty sure that I showed my son when he was younger. You know, he's older now, he's 21. And to this day, if we're like in a situation and he's seeing me do a slow burn, just like Hawkeye, and my nostrils are flaring, he'll just turn to me and he'll go, steady. And it will break me up every time. It always, whatever tension is there, it just instantly dissipates. It's just that same timing, steady.
Steady.
And also the same one is like if I see someone who's like, or know somebody who's like really into comics or really into the stuff I'm into, and he'll just turn to me and go, he's one of you.
Yeah.
I think so. Hawkeye, of course, has his meltdown, and you know, he does. It's this great, you know, rabble rousing Norma Ray kind of moment where he gets everybody involved. And I love that again. The running gag that Radar is the only person, or virtually the only person in the camp that likes the food.
Right.
I mean, he even says my mouth is tone deaf, and even in the middle of his rebellion, he's shoving food down his gullet.
Right.
Even you know, he's chanting, "We want something else." And and it took me to watch this episode with subtitles to finally learn the line. I never understood what Hawkeye said, where he said something, something of the world arise. Yeah. I could never figure out what it is. And now thanks to the subtitles, I now know he says draftees of the world arise. I'm like, oh, that makes perfect sense. But I could never reason out that word. until this moment. It's one of the things I thought about when rewatching this, is that this is an episode that you probably couldn't have done without Henry, because Colonel Potter would not have put up with this.
No.
Hawkeye could not have gone that nuts under Colonel Potter. That just would not have happened.
No. And the line is a riff. I think it's from Karl Marx, isn't it? Workers of the world unite. You have nothing.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And I think it's Karl Marx. But yeah, exactly. This only could have been done in the first three seasons of the show. And frankly, in the third season, when they were starting to really hit their stride, because just the sheer humor of the whole thing. But you're right. Hawkeye loses it in a way that he never could with Potter years
ago. As it is, I mean, Blake calls him into the office and kind of gets about as stern with them as I've seen him, right?
Right.
You can't go on doing, right? You can't do that in this man's army.
Henry always undercuts when he's yelling at somebody when he says one of his nonsense words. And in that scene where he's talking to Hawkeye, and Hawkeye's saying, you know, and he says, well, don't you think I try for some relieviation? Which is just... nonsense word. But one other thing I wanted to mention, and I've only noticed it the last time I watched this episode for this recording, and this is a little touch, and I don't know who threw it in. I don't know if it was Gene Reynolds, the director, or the audio engineer, but when Hawkeye is doing his chant, "We want something else," and everybody is roaring, they then cut to Henry in his office yelling at Hawkeye, but the audio of the mess tent chant spills over into the scene with Henry. And that is something MASH almost never did. They never did abstract little touches like that, but it goes on for about two beats where you hear it. I actually had to play it back and I went, is that what I heard? And it's like, yeah, you literally hear the chants over Henry's face, even though we have now shifted to another scene.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It's a fact. Yeah. And what I also like is in this scene, and even the scene that sets it up, of course, with, you know, before Hawkeye goes off his, you know, off his nut. And this is all throughout the episode. I don't think Wayne Rogers, he's always much more deadpan than Alan Alda played it. You know, the character, especially as the third season wore on, I don't think he, except maybe once, does he crack a smile in the entire episode. But he is incredibly funny, almost playing the straight man. Like he's there along for the ride, in part because he's so entertained by what Hawkeye's going through. So he doesn't want to miss this. You know, he doesn't have the same level of passion about it, but he's all in just because Hawkeye is so all in. And of course, you know, Radar is, you know, half mystified. You know, he even says, you know, are these ribs that great? You know, how big could this really be? You know, it's just great.
Yeah. In Blake's office, one of the things, like you say about Trapper, is that he kind of tells Henry, he's like, Henry, get him the ribs. almost like an older brother, right? When you say, like, Mom, get him the toy that he wants. Right? it's just right. Perfect. The way that they say these lines and the way that they play off each other is just perfect. Henry, get him the ribs, you know?
And then even that Hawkeye's response, no, not ribs. It's got to be those ribs.
Yeah, yeah.
And Henry's like, you're like one of my children.
Yeah. And Hawkeye is so crazy about it. I love it. Henry says this line, right? This is one of like my nine. Henry goes like, I think he's going to have an accident, right? He's going to pee himself because he's so over the moon with these ribs.
Yeah, so crazy.
I love that he describes a flamboyant devil-may-care sauce.
Yeah.
He's so poetic about this. But yeah, I do love that Trapper just says, get him the ribs, because it's almost like, it's like, look, we all know none of us can resist Hawkeye.
Right.
Hawkeye's going to get what he wants because he's Hawkeye. So let's just cut the chase.
Right.
Just get him the ribs. let's just save everybody some time and just do this. Yeah.
That's so true.
He refers to them as Ambrosia, the gods in Olympus. When they got tired of pizza, they sent out for their ribs. And then he goes, ha, yum, yum.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A little kid.
He says, if you tap the vein, you get half hemoglobin and half barbecue sauce from Chicago. Everything, just one line after the other.
Yeah. How did Hawkeye get these ribs, by the way? I mean, he's from Maine. Where did he – I mean, how many times has he been to Chicago?
You know, I don't know, because the thing is that they've always shown that he seemed – He spent some time, I think, in New York also before, and in Boston before he
Boston, yeah. I know that you talked about that he was a resident in Boston.
Right,
yeah.
But I think he even makes New York references at some at different times also. As if he spent some time there.
Needix, so, at Grand Central Station.
Right. So, I mean, it would make sense that maybe he did a weekend there, maybe he was traveling, maybe he went through on his way to, you know, way out west, to flying out from San Francisco to Korea. Who knows? But, I mean, he was an adult, so it's totally possible that he spent, you know, a short period of time there, even if it was just a weekend.
I guess so. And this is a pretty important place, this Dearborn Street station, because Henry mentions that's where he met his wife, Lorraine.
Yes.
Now, of course, that differs from the story he told in Dear Dad 3.
Right.
Because he says he met Lorraine at a mixer.
Right.
So this is yet another thing where the MASH writers are just sort of like, ah, it's a funny line. And they're not worrying about some past episode, because there's no way some nerd is going to still be talking about this 50 years later.
Right, exactly.
It's not going to make a difference. So, I mean, but it throws it in. And I was, you know, I was looking up on IMDb, and I don't obviously know anything much about Illinois. I've never been there. But apparently Henry's comment about that, it was the first time he went to the bathroom by himself. It's like that's apparently it's 150 miles from Bloomington, Illinois. So that seems unlikely that his mother would have driven him all that distance.
Yeah. They would always stretch things in MASH a little bit but that was okay. I mean, it's just it's such a funny line that it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Illinois is a big state, but
right.
Then, yeah, exactly. So and then now, of course, as I said, we're moving into the end of the first act, and it's, I love that, you know, Hawkeye's just determined. I'm getting them. That's it. I'm getting them. Whatever. And then Henry says, you know, as long as you're in this man's army, you behave yourself and you fly in formation, which is just such an empty threat.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it goes right to where he says, Radar, let's get started on the inspection, which means golfing.
Right.
And Radar picks up the golf bag. And that's pretty much the end of Henry for the episode. I mean, again, it almost feels like the MASH writers were kind of testing themselves a little of like, how few characters could you tell a story with? You know, I mean, can you just do a story with basically these three characters? And I mean, Radar is the Data of MASH. I mean, he's the guy that's going to get things done. So that's how it works.
Right.
I mean, you need Radar in this. You kind of don't even need Trapper in some ways. But I love how the act one ends, where Radar walks out with the golf clubs. Then Trapper even kind of gets bored of Hawkeye going on and walks out. And the scene just holds on Alan Alda as he's talking to himself about the ribs. He's just sitting there like a mental patient. He's like, yeah, they were terrific.
The way he shakes his head, it's just like he's over the moon. And you're right, everybody else is just like, enough.
Yeah. All right. I'm tired of this. And then he said Hawkeye wakes up in the middle of the night and figures out, okay, we've got the plan of action. We're going to do this. He goes into the office to get Radar to wake up. There's a scene with Klinger on sentry duty. Klinger always got stuck with sentry duty, of course. And again, this is the beginning of the phone calls where this great two-hander with Hawkeye and Radar, where he's talking about Chicago, and he mentions Carl Sandburg, and of course Radar's like, who did he pitch for?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Chicago, hog butcher to the world, the steak toolmaker, stacker of wheat, home of the pigsicle.
Yeah.
He's just really waxing rhapsodic through all this stuff here. And again, it's just, I mean, of course, Hawkeye, I mean, Alan Alda had a great rapport with all these actors, but him and Radar are just such a great sort of comedy duo, because it's like Hawkeye is, of course, really just talking to himself here. He knows Radar doesn't understand anything of what he's talking about, so he's just doing it kind of just entertain himself.
Yeah, he's doing shtick, but it's he's in his reverie, and this is where, like, that's when Radar asks him, you know, are these ribs that good? You know, it's just because, could it be as good as you're just going on and on and on about? But what's fun also is with these calls, of course, you get Radar starts making, he apologizes to Sparky, you know, he says, I'm headed to Chicago, and then we're off to the race.
I love when he says they're better than sex, and Radar admits, I don't know how good sex is.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, and he says, no one can compete with them, especially the big ones. The ribs, I mean, the ribs. Okay, yeah.
And it is somebody on the line with Radar says, must ape back something that Hawkeye says, because Radar says, yeah, the place with the big shoulders, right? Because,
right.
So, like, you know, he's hearing it from all ends.
The Korea, the place that Bob Hope comes to all the time. And he kind of that, like, yeah, okay, all right, whatever. I always wondered, was there a limit to how many phone calls you could place from the 477th? I mean, you know, I mean, was it, did the army, I guess it was difficult just getting a line, but I love that Radar literally says, this is military business priority one, yeah, which I imagine is pretty important. And it's like, he's just bullshitting his way through all this. It's just fantastic. So they finally get to the station. They get the Dearborn 57500. God, I love the old timey phone numbers. Mm-hmm. Love all that stuff. Yeah. And I love Gary Burghardt's response where he says, Dearborn Station? Yeah? Yeah. Hold on. And he's shocked that it worked.
Yeah, exactly. And then this is, to me, Hawkeye's best scene in the whole show is that when, you know, he's Cranston Lamont, you know, and
yeah,
and interview, you know, and talking to Resnick and try to cajole him into doing his bidding for him is just, this is just brilliant. This is Alan Alda at his comedic best.
All right. Now I'm hoping either one of you can explain one of these jokes to me, because it says, he's talking to this guy and he says, oh, Mr. Resnick. And he says, one of my daughters is called Resnick. What the hell does that mean? Does anybody have any idea?
Yeah. Well, I always took it to mean that he was just trying to butter him up. It's just nonsense.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's nonsensical. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't really mean anything. Right. Okay. Because the way he says it, like it's I don't know. There's something about the way he says Resnick, like you're supposed to know what that is. He does say, God bless your choo-choos.
Yes.
And I actually tried to look that up. I thought, was there a train line called Resnick? But I could not find anything to match that. So I have no idea what Hawkeye's talking.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the choo-choos, is, of course, because he's the station master at a train station. But the Resnick part,
Of course. Yeah. Okay.
So I always took Resnick just simply to be, you know, one of my daughters is called Resnick, because he's trying to keep the guy happy. He's trying to keep him, you know, because he asks him, because at first the guy doesn't want to give him any help. And then he's like, what's your name? And he goes, Resnick. And I love how Radar off to the side, he goes, R-E-Z.
Yeah.
Hawkeye just totally waves
yeah,
off.
Don't bother with that.
Come on. He goes, oh, Resnick. It's a wonderful name. One of my daughters is called Resnick.
Yeah, I mean, the whole conversation, I mean, as we move along, is this, he'll just say anything, right? Anything he needs to do to get to the next phone call or the next person who will do something, it becomes more and more outrageous. So having a daughter named Resnick is like the first domino.
Right.
All right. I'm glad to know there wasn't anything to get, that it is just sort of a nonsensical word. And I do love that when Hawkeye is, you know, he says, like, can you get the phone book out? I want you to read up the number for him. And he gets irritated. And that's when he realizes, oh, I got to change tactics here. Yeah. And then that's when he does, what is your name, please, for the article? Like, he just immediately knows, all right, I got to butter this guy up. That's the only way I'm going to get anything. And I love that he's so patient. But Bernard Resnick. And I love that Radar is dutifully writing that down. it's completely insane. So, again, he finally gets to Adam's Rib. Adam's Ribs. And by the way, I should mention, of course, Adam's Rib is, you know, from the Bible, obviously. And it was a 1942 movie with Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, which called Adam's Rib. So, yeah, he gets to Adam's Rib and he places the order. And I do want to ask you guys something, because I, as a vegetarian, I don't eat ribs, so I don't know. But he orders the, first of all, 20 pounds. I'll make that 40 pounds of your best ribs with the sauce, but don't cook them. Well, isn't part of the reason the ribs are so good is that the way the restaurant cooks them? I mean, why are frozen ribs be all that good?
Ange, do you want to take a shot at it? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole point would be that if they're cooked, by the time they get to the hospital, they're probably not going to be quite as fresh. So just hope that the meat is good enough and the sauce is good enough that Igor is going to be able to do them some semblance of justice.
Oh, God.
Opposed to, you know, getting like rancid cooked meat that you then rewarm.
Right.
God, would you trust Igor with these ribs?
No, but you kind of have to just go with it.
Yeah, you got to do it.
You know, because it's true. You do think, it's like, why, you know, and you also think, how are they going to make it all the way to Korea and stay refrigerated? You know?
Yeah.
But you just, you know, as you go along, you just roll with it, because it's like, if you think too hard about it, some of the stuff isn't going to work. But since it's so funny and it's such a great idea, you just keep going with it, even if it gets more and more absurd. So, yeah, you figure, okay, they want to cook them on site. But then, of course, you realize that the cooks are terrible, which is a joke that also pays off many, many years later. In the all year in one episode when
Father Mulcahy's
Father
corn,
grows
yeah,
the corn and they cream it, and he loses his mind. So it's kind of like the flip side to the joke, but it's just kind of go along with it.
I also love the non sequitur of when Hawkeye is talking to Adam's Ribs and he says, "Yeah, we're celebrating. My mother's out on parole." Like,
yeah, exactly. That was, for the record, that was joke number 3 on my list.
Okay.
I love the most. Because the thing about that is, right, so to get through, because I think the line is busy, and he tells the operator that he has to break through, and he says, "I'm dying in a foxhole." right? So he just, like, you know, first it's like my daughter's named Resnick, then I'm in a foxhole dying, then it's like, no, I need 40 ribs because I'm having a party. My mother came out on parole. It's just more and more ridiculous as it goes on, and so that whole scene just builds in momentum.
Yeah.
It really, really, really does. And so, of course, they end with the button where he realizes he forgot to order the coleslaw, which, of course, will come back to haunt him later on in the episode, but he forgot to order the coleslaw. And then, I mean, this is forgetting to order the coleslaw is sort of the culinary version of the wisdom of the staircase, where it's that thing where, you know, you think of something clever to say to somebody 10 minutes after you've left the situation.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you think of it when you get home and you go, "Why didn't I say that?" It's that same kind of thing. They called all the way to Dearborn Street Station in Chicago and they forgot to order coleslaw. Like, oh, that's just so frustrating.
Yeah. And I like also how he picks up the phone. It's like, "Hello, hello." And
it's
just over. It's just done.
So then they're back to the swamp and the Hawkeye and Trapper, Hawkeye trying to figure out what's going on, about how is he going to get these ribs. And he talks about stewardesses love to do us favors. I did a stewardess a great favor once. I didn't scream while she threw herself at me. And then Radar and Klinger arrive. Hawkeye refers to them as Tilly and Mac.
Yeah.
And I had to look that up. And those are characters from Tilly the Toiler comic strip, which ran up until 1959. So that was a perfectly contemporary reference for Hawkeye to make. And Klinger is mad because as he said, when you went off your noodle and you threw the food in the mess tent, he got mashed potatoes on his imitation stole, which, of course, Klinger is very upset about. And I love this scene in that it really does show you how democratic, small d democratic, the 477th is, that an enlisted man could talk to Hawkeye the way he talks to Hawkeye. He's really mad.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's because they're really friends, you know? I mean, that's what he even says to me. He says, "Look, you know, aren't you from Chicago?" And he says, "No, he's from Toledo." He says, "But I got an uncle in Chicago." And then he said, would he do you a favor? Do me a favor for $100? You know, I don't want a contract put out on the ribs.
He'd kill for me. He'd kill for you. Right. $100 would kill for anybody.
But then, of course, once he won't sign the discharge, then he turns on him and he's like, "Well, then no deal." He storms out.
Yep. I don't know why Klinger is always disappointed at this news that there's only two doctors.
Yeah.
He's had to have lived with this for many years, for God's sake. Yeah. So I don't know why he gets so frustrated. Why would you get mad at the two of the three people that are willing to sign your document?
Right.
Yeah. There's a line in that scene, Rob, that reminds me, you know, what's the line that you love that says, you know, "Frank, why don't you let that cut under your lips?"
You know, I've used that in my life when I've heard somebody talk nonsense. I just let that cut under your nose. You know.
So the throwaway lines, because Klinger says, like, you know, when you got angry that they were serving liver, and he says, "Say liver again and I'll set your teeth on fire." I'm like, what do you mean? Like, how? What are you going to do to set his teeth on fire? And so, again, there were these just rapid fire jokes that just, like, pepper this whole thing that, like, honestly, last night when I was watching this episode, which I've seen a million times, like, honestly, I was laughing out loud alone in the apartment because all of these tiny lines that you forget are in it sort of pop up.
So Klinger storms out, and then now it's really just down to the three of them. How are we going to solve this problem? Radar, you know, is standing there. Hawkeye briefly considers cannibalism, where he talks about barbecuing Radar.
Right.
And then Trapper goes into this wonderful reverie of a previous conquest.
Yeah.
And I love the way Wayne Rogers sells this scene. First of all, he looks off into the distance.
Yeah.
Like he's having just this wonderful memory. He's almost lost in the thought. I mean, he will forget that he's in Korea at the moment. He's thinking of this wonderful woman. And he rubs the rim of his martini glass in a very suggestive way, which really seems to say quite a bit about this Mildred Feeney, that he had this first of all, one night stand. No, two night stand.
Yeah.
No, I think it was a three night stand. It just keeps going on and on and on.
Yeah. Talk about a set of ribs, right? Isn't that what
yeah.
you're
saying? Yeah. I love, too, that, I mean, often Radar is kind of one step behind the other characters because he's more innocent. But he understands what's going on here. Once Trapper starts talking about it's a two night, no, it's a three. And you know, Hawkeye says, Radar, prepare your finger to dial. And Radar's already there. He's already got it. Yeah. He's already figured out what's going on. Now we lead to yet another phone call, which is actually my favorite of the three, is this one that Trapper has yeah. with Mildred Feeney, where she refers, and I love that, of course, Hawkeye and Radar are listening in on it. Mm-hmm. And I love that when she's, that's right, Big John. And even Hawkeye's impressed. He's like, yeah. Big John.
Exactly.
And Radar's like, lucky. Like, this is Marvel. Yeah.
This is also the scene, isn't it, where they get through by saying that he's General MacArthur's personal physician.
Yeah.
And Radar's just his deadpan, wow, I've never been in the stockade before.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love the joke. I mean, again, like you said, Ange, there's so many great lines, and I had to really think about which line I'm going to pick as my favorite. And they're all my favorites because they're all so funny. But I love the little bit of social commentary where he, you know, Trapper has to contrive a reason why he's calling Mildred after all these years. And he's like, oh, I'm not in Boston anymore. I'm a little west of there. I'm in Korea with the war. The war, Mildred. The war. This idea that people could just live their lives blissfully unaware that the country they're in is in a war is, you know, there's a lot of commentary in there, and it still works nowadays that there are people mm-hmm. who can just kind of go through their life and, you know, when there are people who are like, oh, I'm not political. Well, how can you not be? You know, right. I mean, what are you talking about? So that line is fantastic. And, of course, I never know whether they've got an actor on the other side of the line giving them responses to help the pace. Either way, Wayne Rogers nails that pause brilliantly. Whereas the war, Mildred, beat
yeah.
the war. He's so frustrated.
Yeah, she doesn't strike me as the brightest bulb because then they have to explain what they're doing, right? And he's like, oh, yeah. we can't practice on real people. So, you know, we need right, we need ribs for fake anatomy. And then he's like, yeah. and then the sauce for fake blood, right? You know, and they're like looking at each other, shrugging, like, I guess, right?
But then you understand.
Exactly. But you understand.
Yeah.
Wow, she's smart.
And I also love the instructions that he's giving to Mildred about what to write on the package. They're clearly just making their up as they go
yeah,
along.
Yeah.
You know, Mark, do not spill, urgent. And yeah. then it was like, even says like a highly contagious. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure the Army would not just ship a box that says highly contagious to a random address at a hospital. I would think that if I addressed a box and I marked it highly contagious and I sent it to Angie's hospital, they wouldn't just send it. I think that. Oh my God. So, you know, they finally get the ribs and, you know, he's like, okay, we're going to do this. And I mean, it is really nice of Mildred to do this. I mean, this seems like mm-hmm. a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, she's going to pay for them out of her own pocket. They're going to send her a check. I don't know how anybody from Korea sends somebody a check, by the way, but yeah. That's a whole other thing entirely. So then they finally get the ribs and they're just so excited about this. And I love that how kind of rude Trapper is. Like, once he gets her to do what he wants, he's like, I got to go, Mildred. Bye-bye. Like, he just hangs up on her instantly. And then that's the scene you're talking about, Dan, where he says the package is for B.F. Pierce, Dr. General MacArthur's personal physician. And I love that Radar just says, oh, yeah, I've never been in the stockade before. But he does it. He writes it down.
Along,
he goes along with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also love that he buttons the scene with saying, thanks, Big John. And he just gives Trapper a little slap on the back.
Yeah.
Okay. And Trapper looks kind of irritated. Like,
exactly. Yeah,
Big John. So. Yeah. And then we lead to the final hurdle here in another scene in the middle of the night. Again, it's good that there's no troop. There's no wounded to worry about. They have time for all this stuff. Radar comes and he talks about the supply depot in Weizhongbu. They're hung up in channels. And he says, I talked to a Major Pfeiffer. And he says, he wouldn't even talk to me. He wouldn't even talk to me when I talked to him. He says, drop dead. And then he got rude.
Yeah.
Well, what I love about that bit is that when Radar comes running to tell them that you know that it's hung up in channels and Hawkeye goes right over to Trapper to wake him up, he says the ribs are here, and Trapper just goes, let's eat, you know, which is like the it's the most emotion he's shown this entire episode, Because, again, the whole time he's been kind of just playing along and playing the straight man. Even during Hawkeye's meltdown in the tent, you know, he's just kind of watching from the side while all this mayhem is going on until he finally picks up a couple of pans and starts kind of half-heartedly banging them together. This is he's totally watching this as a show. But by now, he's so invested himself and he's so up for the ribs that when Hawkeye wakes him up, it's like it's like this just visceral, let's eat. And he's ready to go.
So then we go to the supply office. And again, we have a new, maybe not a new set. This is probably just a redressed supply tent that we've seen. And we meet the first of two functionaries that are just there to sort of get in the way of this. First is Major Pfeiffer, played by Basil Hoffman. And Basil Hoffman is one of those actors, you don't know the name, but you know the face. Yeah. You have seen him in a million things. I looked him up on IMDb. He currently has 9 projects in production. So this guy's keeping busy.
Wow.
He reappeared on MASH in the Cave episode, playing a different character. He's had appearances in L.A. Law, Small Wonder, The Twilight Zone, Falcon Crest, Night Court, Square Pegs. He was in movies like All the President's Men and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Just one of those utility actors. Right. That can do – that just can – you know, you just need a guy for like 5 lines and that's the guy you get. And, you know, we start seeing that it isn't just so easy as to get yourself a package at the 477th. It's got to go through channels. And the fact that Hawkeye and Trapper didn't do it, this guy has no interest in helping them. And, in fact, for them – for this guy to even do his job, he's making them do physical labor by moving boxes around. It's like, what a dick.
Yeah. But they're willing to do it because it's like anything they can do – to smooth things along and get what they need to get. I mean, they're like, okay, we'll move this through until finally they're like, look, who's your superior officer? And of course the punchline is the sergeant, who's of course like,
which makes no sense. Why is the sergeant the boss of the major?
Because it's the same way that they always say, if you want to get something done, you go to the company clerk. You know, it's like in a sense that he's not really the boss, but he is. He's the one who really makes the place run is the sergeant, not the major who's nominally in charge.
I've mentioned in previous episodes, I always remark about what gets cut in syndication.
Yeah.
And some episodes get trimmed like 5 seconds out of every scene or 10 seconds out of every scene to get it down. And in other episodes, the editor will just lop out a whole scene and leave the rest of the show intact. This episode, I never saw this scene with Major Pfeiffer until I got the DVDs.
Same here.
The local syndicator just cut this entirely.
Yep.
And I remember it. I used to look up these episodes on IMDb and they would list some actor and I'd be like, is he in the episode? Or I'd see the end credits and I'd go, who's that guy? I never saw him before. So the editor decided, oh, I guess he made a creative decision. I'm just taking the Major Pfeiffer scene out and leave the rest of the show intact.
Yeah, I had the same reaction. Like growing up, I had no idea that scene even existed until I got it on disc. And I was like, oh, I've never seen this before. And then, of course, it plays out. And then it's like, oh, yeah. I was like, what happens to the sergeant? Where's the sergeant? And then we, of course, get to the sergeant.
We get to Sergeant Tirola, played by Joseph Stern. This is another guy. He doesn't have quite as many credits. He's been on shows like Kojak, Heart to Heart, The Rockford Files. He actually moved on to become a producer and has produced shows like Judging Amy, Law and Order, and Cagney and Lacey. So he's continued in a sort of different part of the Hollywood career. And I love he's got his stogie sticking out. And he clearly stuff's just piled up, as you can see. There's all this crappling behind him. And he doesn't care that these are captains. He's just telling them to go pound sand.
Right.
And, of course, this is where we find out that he is from Joliet. And apparently he says it wrong.
Yes.
You don't say Joliet. You say Joliet. Yeah. And only people from Joliet would know to say it correctly. So whoever told him to say it didn't say it right. But of course, Hawkeye and Trapper pull their medical card, which, Ange, I assume you've done at some point in your life?
Every so often. Not really, but...
Nah. And I love that they go immediately for, this place would be a great breeding ground for cholera. Like, my God, that seems like a big leap to go to cholera, for Pete's sake.
And they start listing his symptoms.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, see, you're sweating. I'm not sweating. You should be. And he says, the blinking and the up and down motion.
Yeah. Which is
just classic. That's like Marx Brothers, nonsensical, just gibberish. And I love that Sergeant Tirola sees through it immediately.
Yeah.
I love it. He just pauses and he goes, what's in the package?
Right,
like he just knows. All right.
Yeah, what are we going to deal here? What are we going to do?
And then they reveal that, he says, they're ribs from Chicago. And the guy immediately goes, Adam's ribs, and that leads to the line that you guys mentioned, where he's one of you, which is fantastic.
Yeah, he says a line that I think is great because he says, "I used to walk in Chicago on my hands and knees in the snow for a takeout order." Right, like these are truly magical ribs that you know put themselves in physical danger. It's such a great line, and it's not like he doesn't think about it, right? Like it's the timing of these things. Like he's been waiting on that line forever. Adam's ribs, I crawled in snow.
He's also greedy as hell because he asks Hawkeye, "How many did you get?" 40 pounds. And he goes, "I'll take 20 and a quart of sauce." You're going to take a 50% cut?
Right, right.
That's like the mob doesn't give you that kind of deal. Like, holy crap. Even I remember as a child watching this episode, I'm like, this guy's an asshole. Come on. That's crazy.
Right. But he's so
and then,
used
of course,
to, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, he's so used to obviously getting his way because he runs the place that, like, Hawkeye, they're just like, oh, come on. And so he just, Hawkeye doesn't bother, he doesn't dispense with the idea. He knows he's going to have to give up, make a deal. So he just puts that one in half, 10 and a pint, and then he has to come back with 12 and a half.
Yeah.
Like, all right, deal, you know.
And coleslaw.
And coleslaw.
Right.
I didn't get coleslaw. You drove all the way. You went all the way to Chicago. Forgive us for draftees.
Yeah, perfect line. Perfect.
Yep. Yeah, it's fantastic. So, and then we get to the final scene of the show where we see our heroes, including Klinger, getting ready to eat, which is actually very generous of the guys to invite Klinger, considering how much he was resistant to helping them out. I mean, I know that they're nice. Yeah. I mean, Klinger's one of the gang, but still, it's a very generous gesture considering that they are now, they don't have as many ribs as they thought they were going to have in the first place.
Right. But, but 20 whatever pounds it is. Yeah, 28
pounds, I guess they'd have left.
That's a lot of
right.
rib. That's a lot of ribs. But what I also thought was kind of funny is how, again, Goldman and Igor come and present it out to them, and then they don't get to sit down and enjoy them with them.
I know.
I only like to imagine that they like said, well, you know, you guys can have yours also. You can, you know, make sure you guys grab some for yourselves. And they went off and ate wherever they would eat. But I was just like, after all of that, can you make, you know, being on you know mess tent duty is no fun, as they've shown over and over and over again. And to have these poor schmoes have to give you this feast and then walk away, I always thought was a little unfair.
Maybe they let them each take a rib or something. That's a riblet.
Right, exactly.
Something.
Yeah, riblet. Right, exactly.
It also is very instructive to see that this is the one of the rare moments that Radar doesn't hear the choppers coming
right
ahead of time. I think because he's so caught up in in the you know the meal that he actually misses the signal for once. I thought that's how good these ribs are. They are that magical.
Right.
Yeah. And we get Hawkeye gets dragged away, which is, you know, it's very rarely did they ever show Hawkeye or any of the other doctors not reacting like a professional once wounded. Right. But to conclude the joke, it works that Hawkeye is, he's going, but he's being dragged off by his friends. Right. And he just wants to get one rib to suck on just before he has to do triage.
And you have to imagine that after whatever session they were going to have, he'd be able to go back to the ribs, but it's just not the same. I mean, everything, the payoff has to be, and this is classic MASH, is they get right up to the line and then, you know, the rug gets pulled out from under them right at the end. So it's just after all of that, after everything they've gone through, they still can't get the ribs the way they want them. And that's also what makes it priceless, because it's in a way, it wouldn't be the same joke if you actually got to see them enjoy the ribs.
Yeah.
Right.
It's funnier that they don't.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, Ange, that this has happened to you at some point in your career, that you sat down to enjoy maybe a meal or maybe something else, and then some emergency came in, and there's got to be some part of you that's just like, okay.
Yeah.
I imagine that's it's got to be true to life.
It might not be things as dramatic as ribs, but I can tell you, like, there are times working through an emergency department shift where you're saying, like, oh, look, there's like a 10-minute window right now where nothing dramatic is happening and I don't have to make phone calls or anything, and you go to eat whatever it is that you're eating from Oban Pan or Regina's Pizzeria or wherever, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know, we need you in, you know, room 51, which is like our resuscitation room, and you put it down. And I'll tell you, like, the story that I always say is there was one morning where, you know, when I come in the morning, if I'm not working clinically, I'll still walk through the ED to just see what's going on. And I walked to where all of the doctors sit, and there was a coffee with like a wisp of steam and a bagel with one bite out of it, but nobody was around, which basically meant something big was happening somewhere else in the department, right? That somebody had finally sat down for their breakfast and got called away.
This coffee's still warm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's it.
Yeah, it's it. It's a masterpiece of an episode. I mean, it is because, you know, Dan, you mentioned that we talked about the OR episode, which is really one of the most dramatic downbeat episodes the show ever did. And, it, you know, by doing shows like that, they have the license to do a show like this, which has absolutely nothing to do with anything medical. It is just about the frustrations of living in this situation where even something as that we take for granted, or maybe we don't take as much for granted nowadays, but something that most people can do without nary a thought, which is get takeout, requires Herculean effort by our heroes. And that's what makes the episode so resonant on top of it just being incredibly funny. But it really does have that level of pathos to it that it's like, good Lord, all the work these guys have to do just to get some damn ribs. It just seems absurd.
And you know, pardon the pun, but it's also a really lean episode in the sense that it's just joke, 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 joke. There's not a wasted moment, not a wasted scene. It is brilliant for not having Frank and Margaret in the episode to create even more problems or to contrive some reason to complain about what they're doing. It's all about them fighting the system and doing whatever they can do to get what they want under insane circumstances. And it is just to be able to watch them in action. And like I was saying before, there might be funnier moments. There might be funnier single jokes. There might be whatever it is, but just like on and on from beginning to end. I don't think that there's an off note this entire episode.
Yeah. And the thing that I think is part of it is that Hawkeye really sells how great these ribs are so that you do kind of get caught up in his almost hysteria. And if you watch the show enough, you know, he talks about it basically the way people talk about sex. And so at one point he says those big jumbo ribs, you know, it was like making love to a xylophone, whatever that means. And then Trapper looks at him and says, you know, gluttony, greed, lust, oral sensations, like all about this, like, you know, this period of Hawkeye being like turned on by the concept of these ribs.
Yeah. You're seeing the real me.
Yeah.
He talks about. Yeah.
Really great.
Seeing the real me. And something else too, this episode leans on very heavily, and they would hint at it in other episodes, is that, and having never been in the military, I can't speak to this, but it does sound from what I have heard somewhat real, is that in a lot of ways, the supply department really was your worst enemy. And in fact, there's a line in a season 5 episode, the Korean surgeon, where they talk about that they want to draft a doctor, and he says he's from the other side. And he said, "What do you mean the other side? The other side of the war." And Radar goes, "You mean he's from supply?" That's how much everybody hates the supply sergeants, is they would really consider them the other side of the war. So yeah, it's a masterpiece of an episode for a season that was really just burning on all cylinders, running on all cylinders. And the fact that they could do so many varied shows, you could do something so serious. And of course, we know later on, the show's going to get even more serious that they could do, and then do an episode as goofy as this and yet it be so funny and so memorable. I will say, like I mentioned in season 2, when I got the list from various people, but what episodes they wanted to do, season 2, 5 o'clock Charlie was on everybody's list. This episode was on virtually everybody's list that they sent me. Everybody wanted to do Adam. There isn't anybody that doesn't love this episode.
Well, this was like when you put out the call for people for season 3, as soon as I saw it, I responded right away. Adam's rip, you know, right away. I was like, I will not be able to live with myself if I do not get to talk about this episode. This is the one, you know, and I think I said that, and I think I said, and if not, if I'm lucky, I'll take that and OR, because I've got a lot to say about that. So thank you, Rob, for indulging me, because I think I would have had to pull a Hawkeye Pierce to make sure that I appeared on this particular episode. I mean, there's definitely some more as the years go on that I would like to be a part of, but thank you so much for letting me be part of this one, because it feels like a capper to what has basically been, like I said, a 40-year joke in my family.
You know? It was just too coincidental that you both asked me the same day, independent of each other. It's just, I couldn't resist that.
And I don't know if you remember, Rob, but you had put out, say, like please let me know what episode you want to do. And I immediately sent this one. And then you hadn't told me that I was going to do this episode. And at one point on MASHcast, you said, you know, I've lined up like almost the rest of the season. And I tweeted you, I'm really sad that I didn't get to do Adam's Ribs. I guess I'll just have to comment a lot. And you were like, oh, didn't I tell you? You're also going to be on the show. And it was like the best birthday gift ever. I'm like, I want to be on the show and talk about this episode? Because it's the same thing. I mean, eventually we're going to talk about our favorite lines. Like, my favorite line in this episode, I don't even know if it's a joke, but it's something that I say all the time. So I'm so happy that I'm here because I just laughed my way through.
I'm sorry I left you hanging even for a minute. I feel terrible about that, but I'm glad it all worked out. Well, okay, let's get right to it. What was your favorite? I know you had a hard time, you know, singling one out, but what is your favorite line?
So first I'm going to tell you my second favorite line, because this is more of a true joke. So when Klinger walks in and is complaining about things, he says, you know, he gets his lingerie from Chicago, and Trapper says, and it's beautiful. And then, like, everybody looks at me and goes, so I hear, right? So that has nothing to do with ribs or anything like that. That is just a great joke that's just stuffed into that scene. But my favorite line, because I love food very, very, very spicy. That's like the way that I eat my food. And so Hawkeye says a line, he goes, the ribs burned my upper lip. I had a little cut. I kept the scar alive for a year. The pain was exquisite. Like, he's so happy that he keeps licking this cut because he gets a little bit of a taste and the pain was exquisite. Like, I say, when I eat something too spicy, I'm like, the pain is exquisite because that's the sort of like ecstasy I'm getting from the food that I'm getting. Yeah. So far and away, that's my line. I say that all the time.
I love that description. I love the way he delivers that. And you're right. It's such a great way of putting the point on that particular scene and his love for these ribs. But yeah, that's a great line. That's a great choice.
That reminds me of a story a friend of mine told me years ago that he got, actually it was ribs. He got super spicy ribs at a joint when he was in college, and it burned him so badly he had to go to the hospital. but he told the story with that wide-eyed look that Hawkeye has of like, boy, that was a great day. I'm like, all right. I mean, you know, the couple of times I've gone to the hospital, I don't tell the story. It's like, boy, that was a hell of a day. It was like, no, it was terrible. But he was like, yeah, boy, they were so spicy, I had to go to the hospital. He almost was starting to Homer Simpson drool about it. I was like, wow, it must have been some damn good ribs, so I can understand that. So, all right, so Dan, what was your favorite line?
You know, if you ask me tomorrow or ask me yesterday, it would probably be different. But one of the ones that has always stayed with me is the one that you mentioned earlier, is one of my daughters is called Resnick. Because it's just so absurd. And he'll say anything at that point to get what he wants. And also the fact, and I don't think we've mentioned this yet, that when he identifies himself as the reporter, it's Cranston Lamont, which I love. And of course, when I first saw it as a kid, I didn't get the gag. It was my mother who explained that's actually Lamont Cranston, who's the, of course, the alias of the Shadow. So it's just, again, one of those pop culture references that Hawkeye turns on its ear. And I always loved that. And just the Cranston Lamont is always something that is stated.
Yeah.
That's actually my favorite line is the Cranston. Well, first of all, it's the gibberish. I love when he refers to our star-speckled, spangled fighting boys, which is gibberish. but I love that he says Cranston Lamont and that he inverts the name.
Yeah.
To kind of almost give it an extra bit of verisimilitude, that it's like, it sounds familiar, therefore plausible,
right.
But it's not like saying Clark Kent, where everyone would know, wait a minute, that's bullshit, his name isn't Clark Kent. But if you say Kent Clark, it might just be, all right, I guess that sounds right. Like, it sounds just familiar enough. And again, it's like the Shadow was a contemporary reference at the time. So that's my favorite line, is that he calls himself Cranston Lamont, which is just so obscure.
Right.
And yet it's perfect. And I just laugh at it every time I hear it. And just the way he just rolls off his tongue. Yeah, this is Cranston Lamont he just sounds so official. Yeah. It's just perfect. It is my favorite joke. I mean, believe me, I have to pull a clip from the episode to end this show, and I found another line. But yeah, it was hard because there were just so many good lines to pick.
Yeah, I mean, and also the thing about Cranston Lamont is that it sounds like a foreign correspondent. So I mean, even then, it's just like it's got that everything about it works.
Absolutely, and he said that about this episode. Just everything from beginning to end just works. So So, boys, I have to congratulate you both. I don't have records, but I think we have now officially done the longest MASHcast to date about this episode. I don't think I've done an hour long episode to this point talking about Adam, but here we are.
Well, when you told me that Ange was going to be on, I was like, well, this is great because this is an episode that deserves this kind of celebration. You know, this isn't just any old episode, and that's not to say that the other episodes have been so far have been any old episodes. A lot of great stuff in there. But for me, this is a Hall of Fame. You know, if I had to, in my mind, like go through top five MASH episodes, you know, I would probably do the two first BJ, Henry, the two BJ, the Potter, and this. Like to me, that's like the prime MASH, and certainly I think the funniest of all of the Trapper. Well, funny of all the episodes, but especially the Trapper episode.
Yeah. For me, what I thought was going to happen was just as what happened as we've talked about it, is that we were all going to say what our favorite jokes are, which they're all great, but everybody's had a little bit of a favorite, and we're all just going to laugh, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the magic of this show, is that, you know, we've just killed an hour basically replaying an episode ourselves as almost like a teleplay laugh our butts off, you know? It's just perfect.
I have so been looking forward to this. I mean, from the very beginning of MASHcast. Can we get to season three already? I mean, it was fun doing the Leslie Nielsen episode, but when can we talk about Adam's ribs?
We have taken twice as long as the episode itself.
Right.
To discuss it. More than twice as long as the episode. So,
funny.
Well, again, gentlemen, thank you both so much for joining me. I really was looking forward to this, and it's great. And I love bringing people together. This is fantastic. Yeah. This is cool. I'm going to call you Dange Greenfield from now on. It's going to be the portmanteau that I've made for the two of you.
Nice.
So before we sign off, Dan, why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Sure. 13thdimension.com, the website that Rob contributes to, and you can find us at 13thdimension.com. It's a comic book website. Plus, you can follow us on Twitter and the Facebook, where we are quite active in both places. So come pay us a visit.
Excellent. Ange, what about you?
I'm most active on social media on Twitter, which is at DrAnge70. And I also run a Supergirl fan site called Comic Box Commentary, where I talk mostly about Supergirl, but some Superman and Legion stuff as well.
Absolutely fantastic. Thanks, guys. Of course, we are always talking MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. You can find back episodes of the show on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com, and on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. And finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW Podcast, and there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So big, big thanks to Adam Sanders, Nicholas Prom, Russell Burbage, Stan Peel, and Suzanne Holland for their support of MASHcast. I salute you all with a S47/19J accompanying. So that's going to do it for this episode. So until next week, that is all.
Actually in Chicago now, a little bit west of there. I'm in Korea, to be exact. Well, I got called up into the war, and I got to thinking about you. What? The war, Mildred. The war! Hey, come on, you guys. Take it easy. You're worse than the real thing.